Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Faraday.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you so much, Audrey, for getting us on the show one more time. And I suppose we can tell folks out there that you and I are alone tonight. Mike and Emily are off celebrating. What is the day? That's right. Blue Moon Thursday. That's what it is. Okay, but they're off tonight, and we're doing this as a duet tonight. And I'm sure things will go very well. You've done all that news research for us, which we usually push off on Mike and some of it on Emily, but you can do it, Audrey. I know you can. You always do. And thank you very much for being here. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm your host, Keith Haley, and we want to thank Johnny Cash for getting us on the road again as he takes us on that trip across 90 cities and states throughout the United States. And we usually cut him off around Dayton, Ohio. I was just there yesterday, as a matter of fact. And Dayton is still there, for those of you who might doubt that, to live in Ohio. I think most of the industrial world has pulled up the carpet on the city and left to go other places. The biggest one was National Cash Register finally deciding to move out entirely. And I understand the University of Dayton bought their property. So that will be interesting if UD can fill all that. But anyway, here we are tonight. It's the Jumble Justice Radio Show. And the purpose of our show on the Blog Talk Radio Network is to take an inside look at criminal justice practice and its professionals. We'll try to do that tonight. In fact, tonight we're doing something absolutely unique in terms of our more than 3 years on the Jumble Justice Radio Show. We're going to look at a position in criminal justice that we haven't talked much about, but but we've not focused on, and that's going to be the position of a parole board member. And I'll reserve a moment here before I tell you about that. But the purpose, what we do here, is discuss news issues, events, and developments in the always difficult and sometimes humorous practice of criminal justice. And, of course, we dedicate our show, particularly tonight, as they're working all over the world to protect not only U.S. citizens, but the rest of the citizens of the world, our criminal justice professionals. What would we be without them? And now with the latest terrorist threat or attempt. I love what they keep saying, alleged attempt. The guy was strapped in with, PETN in his underwear, and they caught him. And I would say that that's not they, meaning the people on board the plane, I guess, actually caught him, but as he was flying from Amsterdam to Detroit. But it's not alleged, and in my mind, when you're caught with all that stuff, but I suppose we're going to give him a full-blown trial and whatever that we need to do. But anyway, you're listening on the Magic of Blog Talk Radio. I was reading David Pogue's column today, and he was looking at kind of like the top 10 things that are happening in the tech world in relative to the internet and cell phones and all that business that connects us. And he was talking about more and more radio stations shifting to the internet. Remember 3 years ago I said they'd be doing that? That Alan Levy, who's the genius of Blog Talk Radio, put all this together. Now there are literally thousands and thousands of shows, and then in other means and other delivery systems, but via the internet, people are shifting more and more to the internet because they can broadcast worldwide. And I had a very interesting experience today. I guess I could mention I was listening to a country radio station. One of the things that David Pogue listed in his column was one of the trends was the broadcasting on the internet, and he had a radio station guide there for all kinds of things. It was one spot you can go to, and you can get country, you can get classic, you can get symphony, you can get, you know, whatever you want. So I clicked on one of these country stations, Austin, KQAQ, don't quote me on what that one was, and listen, it's a really good country music, and I heard them talking about stuff for you buy for your ranch and what was happening on the ranch and your evergreens and things like that, and then heard them give the temperature that's going to be like 8, a high of 8 tomorrow, and then a -6. And I thought I was listening to Austin, Texas, and I thought they were joking, you know, maybe like an April Fool's joke on Blue Moon Day or something, but it turns out it was Austin, Minnesota. But they have a very nice country music station there in case you folks want to listen to something like that. When our show's over tonight, it's actually archived within minutes, and some people actually do listen to the show later on, and some people use it in some of their classes of instruction in criminal justice programs around various parts of the United States. But if you want to get your own show, January 1, here's a New Year's resolution. How many of those are broken? They say about 80% people don't follow through with their New Year's resolutions. I always thought, you know, 12:01 a.m. on January 1 was pretty much like 12:59 p.m. on December 31, but I could be wrong. But it is a new year, and we'll certainly try to live up to new standards on our radio network. But any person in the interest group, any organization, they can have their own show, and they can broadcast live and streaming audio throughout the world to an unlimited number of listeners, and it costs absolutely nothing. It's free. I still don't understand how Alan Levy does that, but I know he does advertising and all sorts of other things, but it amazes me. Anybody knows how to make money amazes me. But anyway, tonight's show is going to be something interesting. It's called Up for Parole, and I have located for us, we're only going to do one tonight because each one's about 30 minutes, a reality show of a way back in the 1950s when there was a radio show called Up for Parole. And what they did is they let you listen to a potential parolee, in other words, a convict, stand before the parole board and then answer questions about his crime and whether he's going to be a good citizen in the future, et cetera. And then they do little flashbacks on his crime, and then radio actors get involved in portraying those particular scenes. But then at the end, you're asked as a listener to predict, to decide whether or not this particular guy should get parole. And the case tonight is a guy named Denton. And he was, in fact, a doctor, very close to get his certification, professional license to be a doctor, and he ends up going to prison. I won't tip you off on any more than that, but you get to decide. So here we are, audience participation way back through call-in type of stuff, and people in the audience way back in the early 1950s. But it's called Up for Parole, and there are 10 of these incidents that you can actually find on archive.org. Well, you're listening on your Windows Media Player or whatever, or listening on your cell phone. Most people don't realize that. You can also broadcast on your cell phone, because that's how I do it for your radio show, in case you want to get your own show. But if you want to call in during the news segment, I suppose folks are busy tonight, You certainly welcome to do that. Audrey, you have your blonde joke for tonight, and I understand that it's related to our holiday event here. It's a New Year's Eve joke of sorts, a blonde joke. Those who are listening for the first time, I point out that Audrey is, in fact, a blonde. She's been collecting blonde jokes since she was a small child, and she has trunks full of them, and she's pulled one of her favorites out tonight for this Blue Moon Thursday. Audrey, go ahead with that joke.
Professor Haley, tonight's blonde joke has to do with something we never want to happen to us, but once in a lifetime it is possible, unfortunately. I think our listeners will like this one. Here it is. It has to do with New Year's Eve. Returning home from a New Year's Eve party, a blonde was shocked to find her house ransacked and burglarized. She telephoned the police at once and reported the crime. The police dispatcher broadcast the call on the radio, and a canine unit patrolling nearby was the first to respond. As the canine officer approached the house with his dog on a leash, the blonde ran out on the porch, shuddered at the sight of the cop and his dog, then sat down on the steps. Putting her face in her hands, she moaned, "I come home to find all my possessions stolen. I call the police for help, and what do? They send me a blind policeman."
Okay, the canine unit, and she thought the officer was blind. That is something. Yeah. All right. On a much more serious note, the Ohio Coalition Against Firearms, particularly tonight when more firearms will be probably going off than any other day of the year on New Year's Eve around midnight and for another 2 or 3 hours, depending on what part of the country you're in, it's almost like constant gunfire. But police departments around the United States for years have been trying to stop people from doing this in terms of celebration, because what goes up does in fact come down, and people have been killed. I noticed, I think it was the Manila, did you see that order, the Manila Philippines police, they actually were taping up their guns, the muzzle of their guns, as a model for the rest of the people not to fire off their guns on New Year's Eve or on New Year's Day as it breaks in at 12:01, whatever part of the world that you're in. But this Ohio Coalition's requirement here, they want you to go turn in your guns. I'm sure that's the purpose of this message, to get the gangbangers and criminals to do that. But we're going to talk about a gun buyback program tonight that you won't believe in the state of California. And Ohio Coalition, go ahead and play your number.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Well, thank you very much, Ohio Coalition, and it certainly is a deadly idea. We're going to comment on a couple of things relative to that here in just a moment, relative to guns and the increase in guns. You could probably figure out that on New Year's Eve and probably New Year's the whole weekend that the police this weekend in the December probably doubled or tripled up on the idea of DUI checkpoints. So one of the things they're finding out, they'll be setting up their usual sobriety checkpoints. I'm sure people have run into them one time or another. If you've been out beyond 8:30 or 9 o'clock somewhere, you've probably run into them. But there's a new factor this year, and that's Twitter. Fresno, California police say they know that their checkpoints are being avoided by young drivers who are sending tweets on Twitter. Is that tweets on Twitter or tweets on Twitter? There you go. I'm not a Twitterer, so I need to be sure I pronounce that right. But anyway, they're sending tweets, and one of the sergeants out there, he says his own daughter even sent him a text message telling him about where there was a DUI checkpoint. But anyway, they're kind of glad that they're getting the word out, but what they're afraid of is that these young people, while they're driving drunk, they're also sending Twitter messages out, tweets, to other people so they can avoid the same DUI checkpoints. But they're thinking this makes it sort of doubly unsafe to have somebody not only intoxicated behind the wheel, but also trying to drive and send a tweet. So kind of an interesting thing, but be careful out there if you're driving around or you're listening on your cell phone. The federal court just handed down an interesting case. And this is dated January 2010. How could be dated that? But excuse me, that's what it says in the New York Times. This is the first broad judicial standards case for the use of a taser. And everybody knows what the taser is, that 50,000 volt little device that you shoots out the two little prongs and it sticks on somebody and they get the shock and they're down for 5 seconds and the police can take them into custody a lot more easily than fighting them on the street. But anyway, federal appeals court, in California ruled that the police can be held liable for using one of these devices against an unarmed person during a traffic stop. And there's kind of like three criteria for it. So the opinion was strongly worded, and they described a bad morning for this guy named Carl Bryan. He's a 21-year-old Californian, and he's driving along large stretches of Southern California. He's trying to retrieve car keys that were mistakenly taken by a friend. So he ends up being tasered by this Coronado, California police officer, and he's ended up breaking four teeth when he fell to the ground. But he was stopped twice on this little driving trip he was on, once for speeding and another one for not wearing a seatbelt. The second stop, he was real agitated. He was standing outside his car, apparently yelling and screaming uninterpretable things, and he was hitting his thighs. He was clad only in his boxer shorts, in other words, his underwear and tennis shoes, it says. The judge noted that Bryan did not threaten the police officer, and he was not attempting to flee. Those are two criteria that you would use in terms of deciding the legitimacy or the right to use the taser in that situation. All elements of two of the three-part test, and the third part was the severity of the offense. And, of course, these offenses were traffic violations, and they generally would not support the use of a significant level of force whatsoever. So there you are. They're saying that, in this three-part test, I mean, it's not a very significant crime in terms of a dangerous crime at all. And secondly, he wasn't a threat to the officer, and he wasn't attempting to flee as a third item. So they're saying that the officer was not justified in using the taser to subdue him. And so what they're saying is now they're not going to dismiss the liability. This is what the court was deciding, that this officer can in fact be sued, his department, for making that. It's kind of a landmark decision is what some people are saying. That was the lawyer for the Mr. Bryan. But others are saying it does sort of put some new limits on this business of the taser. We have a quote here from Jeffrey Alpert, who did a big study for the Justice Department on the use of the taser. And he conducted other electrical devices analysis in that study, too, but it looked at 17,000 different law enforcement agencies. And he says, if it's not overturned, he said, this Bryan case is going to impact a lot of police departments that have not changed their standards. A lot of them have already shifted to this. They have definitive policies on when you can, use a taser and when you're not. I'm not a big policy advocate in a lot of ways. I think police work is a profession, and we should allow officers to use their judgment. You can't write down every possible circumstance an officer can come into. You can have general guidelines like these three, but even those won't work in every situation. Here's a good one. We have a Michigan gun shop owner. He's trying to make a case for the New Year's, and what he's doing, he's stopping to sell. He's not selling ammo. He suspended selling ammo on New Year's Eve, so people can't come in and buy shells and then go out and crank them off into the sky at 12:01 January 1st. I don't know how good that's going to do. There's a shortage of ammo anyway, I guess, from what people say. But anyway, hey, here's a little story, big story. More guns equal more crime? That's a question mark. Not in 2009. The FBI report shows that for the first half of 2009, they show that crime, the FBI is always about a year behind in getting the stuff out. I'm not criticizing. It is a massive document that they prepare the uniform crime reports. And so they do it in segments and quarters and half years and stuff. But they show that America is a less violent place, even though ownership of guns has surged. And ownership of guns has surged. The deterrent effect may have a role, but others comment and they say there's no correlation. But after several years of crime rates holding relatively steady, the FBI reports now that the violent crime, including gun crimes, have dramatically dropped in the first 6 months, with murder down about 10% across the United States. Currently, the FBI reports that gun sales, especially of assault-style rifles and handguns, two main targets of gun control groups, are up at least 12%. So here you have this substantial increase in gun sales, and then the substantial drop in crime, at least in 1 year, 10%. And, of course, the pro-gun groups, what are they saying? That this proves that more guns, less crime, along with the theme of John Lott's book of the same name. And others are commenting that, no, there's no real correlation. And they go to a researcher here who runs a center in New York, David Kennedy. He's director of the Center for Crime Prevention and Control in New York. Crime's down in New York also. So these are very consistent findings that the acquisition and obtaining of carry permits by ordinary law-abiding people has either no or very little impact on the crime rate. And he says it's not a real correlation. Everything's correlated. I mean, everything's related. It's just how closely. But he's saying that this is not a deterrent effect. That this the correlation is not real. Well, one thing goes up and another thing goes down. They're correlated, but it's just how closely they're correlated. Just because two things vary in the same direction doesn't mean that one caused the other or the opposite, whatever. You get my point. Gary Kleck, a criminologist who substantially advanced his career in the early 1980s with his book Point Blank, found out that there wasn't much written about guns, actually. So Gary Kleck opened that door, and he's a criminologist at Florida State. And he says that this leaves the door open to the idea that the news of booming gun sales could have a deterrent effect on violent criminals. He says it's possible that criminals hear about this, with gun sales really up, and they begin to think, do they want to catch a bullet? That's interesting. Speaking of guns, Audrey, I love this story. Compton, California. What is that? It's kind of a gangster center, right? I'm sure many lovely people and nice communities exist in Compton, but they're giving out gift cards for their guns. So they just had one of these little gun buyback events, and they were giving a $100 gift card for each gun. And this is a no-questions-asked deal. You just drive in and you hand the police the guns, and they don't take your name or anything like this, and they give you this $100 gift card. Well, guess what one of these characters did? He pulls up in his SUV, and he comes out with 58 guns. Most of them are small handguns, but he also had some assault weapons. He's dressed in a sweatshirt and jeans, and the mystery man offered his cash in a nonchalant fashion. As is the policy for such events, the deputies asked no questions and eagerly took the guns in Compton. What should the police do in a circumstance like that? I wonder why this guy got 58 guns. Well, he could be a gun show person. Can you have gun shows in California anymore? I'm not even sure, but that is kind of a hoot, isn't it? Here's another story. I'll finish with this one. I'm not going to comment on the Detroit, Amsterdam to Detroit flight and all the what is now being deemed security and data centers and fusion center mess-ups where one group didn't share with another, et cetera. There's enough of that on the news. I'll let you digest it, and I'll comment on it perhaps next week. But remember, we're going to be moving the Gitmo prisoners. President's already decided that. They're going to be moving them to the Thompson, Illinois prison. And that's already been decided, I believe, at the federal level. Well, guess what? It hasn't been decided at the state level. A panel of state lawmakers, they're expected to vote next week on whether a Northwestern Illinois prison should be closed. so the Obama administration can use it to detain these terrorism suspects. And, of course, this is supposed to bring, one legislator actually commented, this will be millions of dollars for the state of Illinois in terms of work and retrofitting that prison and all that kind of business. But the panel is deadlocked. It's deciding this 6-6. And they're actually saying that perhaps the whole legislature should vote on this, since people are a little worried about having some of the world's most dangerous people in a prison not that far from Chicago, and certainly not that far from downtown Thompson, Illinois. But I thought that was interesting, that I thought this was all decided at the state level, but it isn't. So who knows where those Gitmo prisoners would end up. Maybe some more of them could get that art therapy treatment. Two of these guys that apparently helped our current guy in Detroit learn how to dress himself up with PETN in his underwear, they were sent to the Saudi Arabia from Gitmo as a part of an art therapy program. And apparently they left the art therapy program. They weren't pleased. They went to Yemen. And they got involved with Al-Qaeda and some training people on how to do very, very dangerous stuff. So that's the end of our news tonight. What we're going to do now is kind of take a look at this business of the parole board and what they do. And I think you'll find this show, if you like old-time radio, you'll really like it. But I think you'll enjoy this because it gives you a chance to figure out, would you, in fact, let Mr. Denton out on parole. Here we go. The show is called Up for Parole, and this is the case of Mr. Denton.
State your name and prison number.
John Newton, Folsom 3375-4.
State your age.
27.
Charges on which you were convicted.
Harboring a criminal, practicing medicine unlicensed, manslaughter.
Sentence now being served.
10 years. I've served 2 years and 3 months. I'm therefore up for parole.
Up for parole. Tonight, transcribed in New York, the first in an exciting new crime series based on authentic cases actually heard by parole boards in your state prisons and reenacted here for the first time. Now, Harry Marvel.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to sit in judgment on another human being's freedom, to decide whether he or she shall become your neighbor, your employee, perhaps your friend, or remain where you, society, have put him, behind prison bars. For that human being is a social offender, a criminal, now up for parole. Remember, at the close of tonight's broadcast, you can compare your own judgment with the official decision of an actual parole board, in this particular case, California's. I ask you, therefore, to listen carefully and consider seriously the story you are about to hear. Told from the official case records of John Newton, Folsom Prison Number 3375-4, now pleading before the parole board and before you for his freedom.
You have the facts of my crime and my conviction and my prison record, but there's more to my story than the legal record as you read it. The very fact that the criminal I harbored was my own brother, Joseph Newton, is... Well, gentlemen, with your permission, I'd like to tell you the whole story.
You may proceed, Newton.
Thank you. I'm up for parole here, not my brother, but his story is part of mine. You see, even when we were kids back home, people used to say, you never know they were brothers. So different. And by the time we were grown up, take the very night of my crime. I was only 2 days away from receiving my medical license. I just finished my internship. Joe was an outcast, disowned as an ex-convict. I'd like to start with that night, gentlemen. We were giving one of the biggest parties the town had ever seen. And for me, it was a double celebration. For one reason, in 2 days, I'd hang up my shingle under my dad's downtown. And for another, I'd just been engaged to a wonderful girl. Well, we never did get married, and her name doesn't appear in the record. But it was a great occasion. Everybody was congratulating me, and it was all I could do to get a moment alone with my fiancée.
Oh, darling, it's a wonderful party. I'm so proud of you.
Well, just as long as you're happy, honey. But I... See, I wish they'd knock off and go home.
What's the matter, John?
Oh, nothing.
You keep looking around as though you were expecting somebody.
Oh, what makes you say that? What do you mean?
Johnny, that's a funny way to talk to me. What's the matter? Oh, your brother. That's it, isn't it?
Yes, my no good brother. Heaven knows where he is now. You know, it'd be just like him to come busting in here after all these years. What are you looking at me like that for?
I never heard you talk like that before. I know how you feel about your brother, but...
Well, how do you feel about it?
About what?
About having a jailbird for a brother-in-law.
John Newton, listen to me. I'm marrying you, not your brother Joe. Forget him and stop looking around, Johnny. He's not coming. Forget him. Forget everything but us.
All right, honey. I'm sorry. Oh, just a minute. The housekeeper's looking for me. I'll be back in a second, honey.
Right. Save me some champagne.
Hey, swell party, Johnny. Where's your dad?
Well, you know how doctors are, fella. I'm out on an emergency. Excuse me a second, will you?
Okay.
What is it, brother?
Mr. John.
Yeah? What's the matter, brother?
Mr. John, there's a man at the back door asking for the doctor.
All right, brother. I'll take care of it. You wait here.
Doctor?
Oh, I'm sorry. My father's a doctor. He's on the case right now.
Right, he tells me you're a doc, too.
I will be in 2 days. What can I...
Are you, aren't you, bud?
I finished med school, but I can't practice until I get my state license.
Well, that's good enough. Come on. We're going for a ride.
What? What? Say, what is this?
It's an emergency, bud. Come on.
Well, I told you I'm not a doctor. You'll have
okay,
to...
Okay. You might as well know. It's your kid brother.
So? Now what? Where is he?
He's downtown in your old man's office. Well, you coming?
Is he hurt?
Why do you think I came after a doctor?
All right. Let's go. The minute we started down the drive, I knew I shouldn't have come. Joe always meant trouble. But an emergency was an emergency. Wheeling out the driveway, we scraped my dad's favorite tree. And thinking as I was of Joe, that started me remembering the time he ran the lawnmower into that very same tree. The time he smashed the glass case over Dad's microscope. And the time he got caught taking home some chemicals from the high school chem lab, and we both got a lecture from the principal.
Just a minute, Newton.
Sir?
About that affair in high school, the chemicals.
Yes, sir?
According to the district attorney's abstract here, an interview with the principal, you had persuaded your brother to steal the chemicals for you so you could do some experiments at home. Is that true?
Well, yes.
Proceed with your story.
Yes, sir. We tore out the drive and on through town, and I couldn't get a word out of the driver, so I kept thinking about Joe. Joe, always the bad boy. And myself... Dad's boy, Mama's boy. I could almost hear my dad saying...
John, your mother and I just can't do a thing with Joe. Heaven only knows how he'll turn out. I guess we'll all have to pin our hopes on you, John.
Yeah, I was their boy. I went through high school, correction school for Joe. College for me in a new convertible. For Joe, stolen car in the reformatory... Med school for me, the state pen for Joe. A gentleman of the board, my own brother had a number in this prison before I even started out that night on the ride that was to lead me to my own cell here. And that's why I say that his story is part of mine, because traveling those streets that night, I realized for the first time that maybe it was the raw deal that he got from my father, my mother, that made Joe the bad one. Now, in the middle of the night, he turns up again in my father's office, in trouble.
I pulled around the back here just in case.
In case what?
The law. Look, am I going to have trouble with you?
Well, what's the law got to do with...
The kid wants to tell you that's okay by me. There's no time to ask any questions. Come on. Look, Doc, are you with us or not?
How'd you get in there without a key?
Jimmy, the door. Pull the shades down so we can turn on the light. Joe? Joey, boy. I'm still here. What the doc, Joe?
Dad?
No, it's me, Joe.
Johnny, you...
Well, look who's out late. Mama's boy. Can't you do something, Doc? Doc, huh? You made it. A medic. What do you know?
All I know is that you're hurt. What is it, Joe, an accident?
Yeah, sure.
All right, let's have a look. Yeah, take your hands away from your chest. That's better. Hey, you.
Me?
Hand me that scissors.
Yeah, sure.
Joe. Bullet wounds.
Yeah, we were playing soldier. What'd you expect, mosquito bites? Joey, save your strength, boy. Doc, you gonna take him out?
I'll give him a shot to ease the pain.
You'll take the slugs out.
You're in my light.
I'm asking you a question.
That'll let up on it, Joe.
I said, are you going to work on them slugs? Answer me!
Look, Joe, listen to me. I'm not a doctor yet. Not legally. 2 more days and I'll have my degree and then my license, but... If I work on you now...
What do you mean, Ed? Shut up, French.
Look, Joe, it's this way. If I operate on you, I'll be breaking the law. The bullet wounds, Joe, I have to report them to the police anyway. Can't you see, Joe, I'm on a spot.
I told you, Joey, I told you we shouldn't have come.
Joe, what did you have to turn up for anyway?
Where else could I go? Where could I... I hate... Guts of you. The whole bunch of you. But where else can I go?
Joe, please, try to understand me.
You rotten family. You never give me a break. Johnny, it hurts. You have a brother lying there begging you, you two-bit pony. Do something.
All right. Lock the door and then go wash your hands. I'll need your help.
For me? Why, I can't.
You shut up and do as I say. Joe, now listen to me.
Yeah, Johnny, yeah.
Joe, I can't use an anesthetic. I can't handle 2 things at once. It'll hurt, Joe.
All right, Johnny.
You ready?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Now hand me that scalpel.
What?
Scalpel, that knife. Well, I sterilized the instruments and then I went to work. My brother gripped the sides of the table. I was a surgeon, and he was my first patient. I started to get sick, but I had to put everything out of my mind except that I had a life to save. And...
Wait, Newton.
Yes, sir?
There's a question I'd like to ask at this point.
Yes, sir?
While you were in the process of removing those bullets from your brother, you realized that you were breaking the law.
Yes, sir, but he was my kid brother. I turned him over to the police. You see, I wanted to be fair.
You wanted to be fair? Well, now I think we're getting to the point. Earlier in this hearing, you described your brother as a no-good, someone you were ashamed of. Now you're talking as if you're sorry for him. You've definitely changed your story. Are you trying to draw sympathy from this board?
No, sir, but if I could say something...
Now, wait, Newton. You also knew at the time how your brother got those bullets.
Oh, yes, sir. It was a bank holdup. A guard surprised him.
And you also knew at the time?
Yes, sir. The guard was killed. But it wouldn't have made any difference, sir. Why, you look like a little kid. Right there. I was going to do my level best to make up for him, for the way my father and my mother treated him as a kid.
Now, just a minute, Newton. Before you go on, we have your complete case history here, which, you know, we've looked over very carefully. Weren't you the one who usually got your brother into some of the scrapes and trouble he had? You were the oldest. Shouldn't you have helped him?
Well, when he was a kid, what could I do with him? You don't know him. Why, he's...
Isn't the real reason you helped your brother that night because you felt guilty? Or perhaps you felt at least partly responsible for the way he turned out?
Yes, I guess it was.
All right. Well, go on. What happened after you removed the bullet?
Oh, it was plenty tough on the kid. On me, too. But we managed to get through it as best we could. I cleaned out the wounds. I used sulfur and I bandaged them as well as I could.
Is it over?
Yes, Joe. It's all over. We'll take a couple of minutes and then we'll take off.
Where?
A friend of mine's got a cabin up in the woods. I'll lead you there in my car and you can hide out until that wound's better.
I gotta get out, Johnny. I gotta hide out.
Giorgio, I know. Don't worry.
Don't worry, huh? How do we know it's okay?
What kind of a rat do you think I am?
Doc, I don't know. But you better not remember anything about anything. You get it?
The party at our house was still going on, but I backed out my convertible without disturbing anybody. I led them back into the hills to my friend's summer shack. I repaired a couple of stitches on Joe's chest, warned him not to move, and then promised to come back in the morning. And then...
You promised to come back? Why?
Well, in a medical capacity, sir. Post-operative treatment, perhaps hypo, change the drains.
I see.
Shall I go on, sir?
Yes, you may continue. What did you do then?
I drove home, sir.
Directly?
Yes, sir.
I have a map before me of the route you took from the mountains.
Yes, sir.
Your road passes the state police barracks. Now, it seems to me...
Oh,
that
yes, sir. I passed the barracks, and then I turned back. I intended to report the whole thing to the police.
The DA's transcript states that you declared, and I quote, "I drove straight home without stopping or turning." End of quote. Did you say that?
Oh, yes, sir, but may I explain, sir?
Yes.
You see, sir, I intended to stop at the police barracks. Oh, in fact, I could have reported it at that time and kept myself in the clear.
But you didn't?
No.
Because you couldn't face your father after he knew what you had done. Is that it?
Yes. I knew it would kill him. So, I went straight home. The house was dark, but there was a light coming from under my father's study door. And as I passed it...
Son?
Yes, Dad?
Well, that's fine. I hoped I'd get to see you tonight, but I thought you'd be long abed.
Well, did you just get in, Dad?
Yes, a tough case, but... Come in, son, come in. Shut the door. Don't want to wake Mother. Yes, a doctor's life. Fine night they picked for an emergency peritonitis. Oh, sit down, son, sit down. Cigar?
No, thanks, Dad. I'm all smoked out.
Quite a night, huh?
Yes. Dad, was there anything special you...
No, nothing special, son, except, well, this will be our last little talk before you get your license. And then your shingle goes up under mine. John Newton, Jr., M.D. That'll look mighty fine, son. John, I'm proud of you. Really proud of you, boy.
Dad...
You know, it's all up to you. I mean, your mother and I, we have all our hopes in you. You know that. Sometimes I wonder about Joseph.
Dad, I...
Yeah. had long since give up figuring it out. The way he... No, there's no use talking about it. It's just up to you, son. Your mother and I, we sometimes go so far as to say we have only one son, really.
Dad, if you don't mind, I'm terribly tired.
Oh, wait, John, just this. I want you to remember, a doctor with so much power for good and for evil, son, has got to be right. Make the right decisions. You took that oath that we all take. Now mean it. In your deepest heart, mean it. Live up to it. Be a good man and you'll be a good doctor. And you, my son, you'll be a great doctor. Well, I suppose I've made quite a speech, but I didn't have to. Because I know you'll never do wrong. I lost my Joe somehow. I don't know, but you're a good son. Well, you're my life, John. My life. Get yourself a good night's sleep, son. There's a big day coming tomorrow.
Sleep? Oh, over and over, I probe for bullets in my brother's bloody chest. Over and over, I tried to cry out to my father, Dad, you don't know me. I'm a criminal. I've broken the law. I'm a criminal, Dad. I'm a criminal. But dreams. Cry and cry. And no words come. And soon, it was dawn. I made some excuse to Dad, something about picking up a bag. I checked, I don't know. I headed for the cabin where my brother was hiding out. Something wrong. The cabin door, it should have been shut. Locked. Instead it was open. Joe? Frenchie? Nobody there. Torn bandages on the floor, bloodstains. I turned to go. I figured Joe'd run out on me. Didn't trust me. Joe running away again. I realized then, you see, I thought I'd be able to straighten him out. But I was wrong. Well, I walked to my car, and there was a man standing beside it with a shotgun.
You, looking for someone, Doc?
Why, no, I... How'd you know I was a doctor?
Been expecting you. I'm from the sheriff's office.
Oh, I see. How did you know?
Well, I shouldn't tell you, but seeing who you are and all, the other hoodlum spilled it all. We got them both.
Could I ask the charge?
Hmm?
I mean, I am under arrest, I guess.
Yeah, you are. As for the charge, well, illegal operation, failing to notify police and harboring a criminal.
My own brother, Sheriff.
Law don't recognize kin, Doc. Or to warn you, anything you say can be held against...
All right, let's get it over with. Take me in.
Yeah, sure, Doc.
No.
You drive.
Oh, wait. Tell me, Sonny.
Mm-hmm.
Does my father know?
About you? Your brother?
About both.
Oh. Your brother? Yeah. You? No. You'll find out when we get there. Come on. Let's go, Newton.
Well, gentlemen of the board, that's my story. I assure you, I knew that I was breaking the law, but I will admit... Now that I did it because I owed something to my brother. And my primary intent was to make up to him in some way for the wrongs that my parents had done him, knowingly or unknowingly. I can honestly say that my primary intent was not crime.
Newton, If you are paroled, what means have you for earning a living?
Well, if I can get my license, I intend to practice medicine.
Practice medicine?
Well, yes, sir.
Certainly society needs physicians, but it doesn't want doctors who lack willpower. Men incapable of clear judgment. Now, we can't gamble. Do you understand?
I know, sir. But I would like to say that I understand myself now.
How do you mean that?
Well, sir, I haven't wasted this time in prison. I think the warden will tell you I've done all kinds of work. I've worked in the hospital, for instance.
Oh?
Lately, I've been a full-time orderly.
Oh, I see. Go on.
And I've resumed my medical studies.
How's that?
Well, I made up with my father, sir. And he brought me medical journals so I could keep abreast of things. All I can say is, sir, if I do receive my freedom, I'll try very hard to live up to your trust in me. Very hard. All I ask is a chance. Well, that's all I have to say.
That is all you have to say, Newton?
Yes, sir.
Well, it seems to me you've left out perhaps the one essential point on which your chances of parole might depend. What happened to your brother?
My brother?
Yes. Finish your story, Newton.
My brother died.
As a direct result of your operation. The record shows he was trailed to a downtown hotel in Los Angeles. Got on arrival.
Yes, sir.
Now, you realize he would be alive today if you'd reported the injury and he had been taken to a hospital.
Yes, sir. He'd be alive today.
All right. Just step outside a moment, Newton. With the guard.
While John Newton waits, and the parole board reviews his story and his parole file, you too have a decision to make on his case. Weigh John Newton's story carefully before you form your judgment, because in a moment, you will have an opportunity to compare your decision with that of the actual board before which he appeared. But first,
in the old days, Milord and Milady had to wait 6 months or more for the wandering troubadours to turn up with the latest ballads. Today, all you have to do is listen in on Saturday nights when Vaughn Monroe's Caravan comes along with the week's five top tunes as chosen by Variety. Vaughn brings you his great band and distinctive style of singing, not only in the five top tunes, but also in the songs of a famous college fraternity or sorority each Saturday. Be listening this Saturday, won't you?
Now, the decision of California Parole Board. Folsom, John Newton, 3375-4.
John Newton.
Yes, sir.
Step forward. This board has carefully studied your record and considered your own story. You may be sure that we have given careful consideration to all details.
Yes, sir.
I must inform you, however, that there was some doubt as to your own interpretation of your basic motives in transferring the blame for your own, well, shall we say, delinquency, upon the attitude of your parents toward your brother and yourself. And, you were informed, I believe, that decisions of this board must be unanimous, were you not?
Oh, I didn't know that, no, sir.
At any rate, we did come to an agreement, Newton. A unanimous decision.
Yes, sir.
That decision is parole granted.
Thank you, gentlemen. May I go?
Yes, you may leave. Newton. This board will make every effort to help you obtain reinstatement with the state medical boards. So, good luck. Next case.
Today, Dr. John Newton may be your neighbor, your friend, your family physician, for he is currently practicing medicine in a large American city. But he himself, John Newton, M.D., though that was not, of course, his actual name, gave us permission to tell his story tonight, asked us, in fact, to do so,
in the interest of thousands of men and women in American prisons who may someday come up for parole. You have been listening to Up for Parole, transcribed in New York with Chet Stratton. Written by Alan Sloan, directed by John Dietz, with music by Harry Salter. Listen again at the same time next week when CBS will bring you the actual story of Case 3374-5, Sing Sing. Yoo-hoo, Mrs. Bloom, Molly Goldberg's famous invitation to fun in the Bronx now echoes across the country each Saturday night on CBS. It's the same fine brand of comedy mixed with a tear now and then that's made Molly and her family, Jake, Sammy, Rosalie, and the others, favorites for many years. CBS invites you to hear the Goldbergs on most of these same CBS stations this Saturday and every Saturday. Stay tuned now for Broadway Is My Beat, which follows immediately on most of these same CBS stations.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that segment of Up for Parole. The show didn't last too long. I think there's about 10 or a dozen of different episodes that you can find on archive.org. We might take a look at another one. They're all interesting, and it's a variety of different kinds of cases, but they are true cases. And did you let the doctor out? I don't think I was going to let him out on parole. And certainly parole is undergoing a lot of transition over the last two or three decades. Some states have done away with it, and other fancy terms that look a lot, the actual practice looks a lot like parole, but a different name. That happens a lot in the field of corrections and criminal justice for that matter. I think we'll have time for our green tip tonight. We did have a story that said for 150 years climate hasn't changed much. We better have to talk about that. But are you using wooden pencils with lead inside? You really shouldn't. Disposable pencils waste wood, because you're never able to really use the very last bit of it, are you? So you should opt for a metal refillable pencil instead. It's always sharp, and you won't waste any lead because you can use it all. I've been a fond advocate of lead, Eversharp pencils for a long time, and I have mine right here in front of me tonight, and you would not find me guilty of using a wooden pencil. Actually, that's not true. But anyway, see you next week, folks. Have a happy new year. And we're going to have Vera Lynn sign us off again for this last time in 2009. We will see you again.
We'll meet again. Don't know when. Don't know when. But I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know? Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We'll meet again, don't know where. Don't know where.